Welcome to Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age, the show designed to help make middle age your prime time of life by defying the notion that once you reach 40, 50, or even 60 years old, your crowning achievements are all behind you. Regardless of whether you're just approaching 40 or are firmly entrenched in your middle years, it's time to launch your very own personal journey toward a joyful and purpose-filled second half of life. Each week, host Roy Richards, an expert on midlife renewal and author of A Midlife Challenge, Wake Up, will discuss the challenges common to middle age and help guide you to a brighter tomorrow. Now, here's Roy.
Well, in this week's program and next week, we're going to turn our focus to another of the major challenges of middle age, successful parenting. And since few of us are in our 40s and 50s, have infants, toddlers, or small children around the house, we'll concentrate on parenting of preteens and adolescents. And we all made it through our teen years, and some of us have raised older children who already have left home for college, the military, or their first job, while others of us are just getting started with your oldest turns 13. And let's be honest, no matter how many times you've guided a son or daughter through the teen years, it's never easy. And am I just imagining things, or is it getting harder all the time? Today's culture and social media seems to be telling our teenagers and children that they all deserve success, and obtaining it should be fun and easy. Let's do away with letter grades in school so no one feels like a failure. Buy a lottery ticket for $2 and become an instant multimillionaire. Download your favorite tunes from the internet for free and get into your college of choice and then coast through 4, 5, or even 6 years, making friends, partying, enjoying the best years of your life, and maybe cracking a book now and then, but not too hard. And unfortunately, you and I, as responsible adults, know that things don't always work out the easy way. And after ensuring their health and safety, I think you'll agree our most important job as parents is to teach our offspring about accountability. And my first guest today, Nick Abrosino, is here with advice on how to inspire your preteens and teens to work for their own success by being both accountable and responsible. And Nick is well qualified for the job. He's an internationally sought-after learning consultant, coach, and speaker. And over the past 29 years, he's helped thousands of parents, teachers, and students to grow youth accountability, productivity, and self-esteem. He began his career as a public school music teacher, but launched his own private education company in 1988, and it still thrives today. And he's written two recent books, one which was published in 2013 called Coffee with Ray, and one that was just released last December called Lessons with Matt. And hello, Nick. It's an honor to have you on Middle Age Can Be Your Best Age.
Thank you for having me. My pleasure.
Well, let's begin with the basics. What's the difference between responsibility and accountability?
That's a wonderful distinction and a really important one when you're working with your teens. For me, responsibility is externally motivated, so there can be punitive response to that from a parent. So it sounds a lot of times like this: if you don't do this, here are the results, and yeah, someone else is instilling those upon you. That causes, obviously, if you've worked with teens before and you have a teenager, you know that what that one thing it definitely causes is resentment.
Yes, rebellion.
And unfortunately, when they get the resentment, they're looking at the wrong place for change. They're looking externally.
Yeah, so they're expecting you to change and rather than themselves.
Yeah. As opposed to accountability, which to me is internally motivated.
Cool.
And certainly in a household, there needs to be both. There needs to be some responsibilities. You take out the garbage, you clean up after yourselves. But then there's also a level of accountability that's probably more important because it's an internal motivation that they will stay with them for the rest of their lives.
Well, from your first book, I'm looking at the preview of it, Coffee with Ray, what's the single word change that can instantaneously turn intimidating challenges into invitations for success? What's that magic word?
Yeah, the magic, actually it's a magic phrase, so it's real simple. I'm sure you've heard our teens say, this is too hard, I can't do it.
Yeah.
And that there's a distinction like we're making between responsibility and accountability that applies here. And I call them diamond distinctions. And they're little word changes that make huge differences in internal motivation or accountability. So if you say, this is too hard, I can't do this to yourself. If you listen inside of yourself, there's an emotional stoplight that occurs. It really questions your own ability. And for me as a parent and an educator, that's simply not acceptable. You should never question your ability. You might want to question whether you have the skill sets yet and you can go out and get them, but never whether you have the potential. And a simple word change to say to your tweens or teens when they say, hey, this is too hard, I can't do this, is change the wording to, this is new and uncomfortable.
Oh, yeah. That's a good point. But what are the three most effective questions to ask your teens and tweeners, as you call the preteens, I guess, that can swiftly turn them into independent learners? What are the questions?
Yeah, it's actually it's an old fairy tale that we used to hear all the time, believe it or not, that actually is a piece of educational wisdom. So part of the focus here is to make the tweens and teens accountable for their own success and their own learning. So with that said, as an adult and a professional educator and as a parent, I see my role, though, as the role of providing them the environment and the tool sets for being successful in creating that level of accountability. So one of the tools is this. When a teen comes up with something and is trying to really figure out what an appropriate challenge for them is, which is a challenge that's not too far out of their comfort zone, but not in their comfort zone, the simple old little fairy tale of the three little bears. Is it too hard?
Goldilocks and the three little bears.
Yeah. And I ask my students and my teens this all the time. Listen, only you know how far you're willing to stretch that learning muscle.
Yeah.
And that accountability muscle. And obviously, it's something that grows with experience, and it also gets stronger the more you use it.
Yeah.
So, and every person's different. Listen, if we all went skiing with all the snow that's going on right now, if we went skiing together, I have certain friends that would jump right to the top of the Black Diamond Mountains, and that's their comfort zone, right? And then I have some other friends who have never skied before, and they would be only comfortable standing in the boots, not even getting on the slopes yet.
Yeah.
And ultimately, the learner is the only one that can really determine that. So when I'm coaching my team on how to be accountable, I'll ask them, hey, is this too much, too little, or just right? And if you commit to the just right, then you need to honor your word on following through on that.
Oh, I see. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, my next three questions may be too late if your youngest child is already a teenager, but they may help when you're a grandparent. How early in life should a parent start teaching your children to be accountable for their actions?
I think it's really a way of life here. It's really something that should happen from the very beginning with a child.
Child should change its own diaper then.
Well, wouldn't that be nice? I'm sure if I can come up with that, there will be a lot more people reading those books.
Well, that may be a little too young, I guess.
I think they actually become accountable for their own learning the moment they start to try to walk. Because and often an adult will come to that rescue, and I don't think it's best. And, you know, certainly we want to keep them out of harm's way. That's our first job. But certainly there are a lot of adults, as soon as a child stumbles, goes and picks them up. Oh, you're okay, you're okay. And what that really does is it sends a message to the child that I might not have the skills to navigate this stumbling road of learning on my own, because every time I stumble, someone comes and tries to save me. So I think when they start, you know, you certainly stay close enough to keep them safe, but when my own children were learning to walk, we sort of just made sure when they felt they were okay and they looked around to see if they got a reaction, and they didn't, and they got up and did that again. Tried again. I mean, we had, in my family, if you want clean clothes when you're 7 years old, you better take them to the washing machine on your own. We'll show you how to use it, but you're going to become accountable on your own.
Yeah, that's an excellent way to do it. But well, at what age do you get your children to become accountable for their own grades and for completing their homework? I would think that'd be pretty young also, wouldn't it?
Sure. As soon as they come home from kindergarten and they have that first level of assignment, I ask the leading questions, which are, hey, when do you want to do this? And when they come back and they, you really want to catch them and reward them for the positive behavior that you want them to replicate here. So when they come back and say, hey, I completed my homework, I don't really acknowledge the fact that the homework's complete as much as I really want to acknowledge that feeling of pride they have in the completion of the homework.
Yeah, yeah. You really compliment them and give them some pride. Hey, you did a great job there.
Yeah, I think another distinction we're speaking about here is the difference just between a simple piece of praise, which is, and this plays into later on when the grades aren't coming back the desirable way that you'd like to see them or that they like to see them. If they come back with the grade, let's say it's a grade that's wonderful, you could simply say, good grade, or you could say, hey, I'm proud of your grade, or even better than that, I think, is, you know what, I'm really proud of how proud you are.
Oh,
of your,
yeah, that's a good way to put it. That's great. So,
yeah, so I know they tell me that my son has really great grades in school and he's right at the top of his class, but to be honest with you, I don't know what his grades on his tests are. What I do know is he comes back and he is either excited about his grade or, more importantly, sometimes for creating accountability, he will say, I'm not happy with the way that grade was.
Yeah,
and I will ask.
Both are real valuable lessons. If they're happy, and it encourages them to try hard the next time. And if they're not happy and committed to that and not blaming the teacher or the unfair test or anything like that, but accountable for it, then that's wonderful too, even though the grade isn't that great.
Yeah, isn't that a wonderful statement? Because what we're really talking about here is if you're going to become accountable for your life, what you can play is the victim role.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. There's too many of those victims in our world today. I was going to say, as a parent of a young child, how do you respond when your child fails at being accountable? I wouldn't think that punishment would be a real part of teaching accountability, or is it?
No, I don't believe it is unless the child has asked you to set up the punishment for them. So, you know, there are some businesses that have had me work with their managers in making them accountable as well. And at that point, it's really a matter of holding their feet to the flame. And the managers set up their own consequences, and it's my job to make sure those consequences are imparted. But under the case of a child, unless a child says, hey, you know what, I need you to help me with this, and if this doesn't happen, then let's have these consequences. Ultimately, it's a child creating that. But more importantly, I think when the child's not being accountable, you have a couple of things that you can really do here. And one of them is to ask them how to feel about that. So if they don't feel happy, and I don't want to confuse happiness with the idea of I got the next level on that Minecraft game, but more about I really fulfilled, and pride is what we're talking about, are the leading feelings to create our teens in our teens and tweens. And if they don't feel that, I will ask them, so what do you want to do about that? You know, what will you do so that in the future you can, or next week's test, you can feel really excited and proud. You know, I think as the teenagers today are in a world that has a lot more stimulus than we've experienced as our
sure does.
Girls.
And a lot more distractions also.
Yeah, and with that said, you know, I know when I have a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old and a 13-year-old, and when we sent our 18, my wife and I wanted to give them one piece of guiding light when they went out there without us, and there were so many questions they could ask themselves, but there's only one that really keeps them safe, and it's real simple. If you would be proud to tell us about what you did, then go ahead and do it. Oh, and if you can't answer that question outright, then don't do it.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. Well, when our kids are in preschool, kindergarten, and the early grades, it seems they were always taught learning new things can be easier and fun, and that's not so much the case when our children reach age 10, 11, 12, and begin preparing for high school and middle school and all that kind of stuff. How do we as parents convince our teens that genuine learning involves moving outside their comfort zone and it's perfectly normal and okay to feel uncomfortable?
That's just such a wonderful question. There's so much to say about that. Let me start with this, is that I do agree with you. It's a pet peeve of mine when we see that preschool sign that says, hey, we make learning fun. I think it really sets up our children for a disservice, and here's why. Is if learning's fun and I'm not having fun, then I guess I'm not learning.
Yeah.
And that's not the case at all, because here's the bottom line, is that learning means gaining mastery over something that you couldn't do at first. And gaining mastery over something means you are going to stumble. As a matter of fact, the fact that you stumble and err says you're learning. You know,
yeah.
I remember once when I came home, my eldest daughter was in second grade, and she was crying. She was at the dining room table doing her homework, and I heard tears. I've never heard that from her before.
Huh.
And I walked in, and she did the this is too hard, I can't do this. And this is before I had come up with that wonderful catchphrase of, well, new, not uncomfortable. So I had to come up with another solution. And what I said to her, I said, I realized that up until this point in your education, you linked learning to knowing.
Yeah.
And learning is not knowing. That was just regurgitating something you already had in your vocabulary.
Yeah.
This is what learning feels like. Now let me give you the tools and strategies to get through this so you can be successful. And as soon as she adapted to that, she relaxed.
Yeah, you know, you may be real positive about learning, even if you don't call it fun. If it's a subject you're really interested in, you really want to learn something new and new skills and new knowledge, then it may not be fun. You may have to stretch, but it can certainly be positive. It doesn't have to be a real negative tooth-pulling type experience.
Absolutely. It's just like you think about when you go to start riding your first two-wheel bike. It's inevitable you're going to fall and scrape your knees. And that's just part of the process. But you get back on the bike and you try it again. And we're comfortable with that when it comes from a physical standpoint. It's okay if I scrape my knees and bruise my body. But when we come to this emotional standpoint, we become a lot more sensitive to the stop sign. Oh, my goodness, I can't do this. I'm not good enough. And this whole internal conversation takes place. That's a stop sign when it should really maybe be a yield sign or actually a green light, even better.
Yeah. Well, here's a hypothetical advantage. Let's set the stage. Let's say you're a parent of a 16-year-old son who just completed the first semester of 10th grade, and you're extremely busy with your career, social obligations, etc. You love your son but never paid too much attention to his grades. It was about average or maybe even slightly below, but you always thought you'd get serious about it when he got near college, say his high school junior and senior years. But you just examined his first semester sophomore report card, 1B, 2Cs, 1C-, and 1D in math, one of the most important subjects going forward, and you panic he won't get into the college with those grades. How do you seemingly overnight begin to hold your son accountable for getting his grades up, and what's the best way to approach the subject, carrot or stick?
For me, always carrot. So that's the quick answer to the solution. And I think to the question, I think here it's not so much about you holding him accountable, but teaching him to hold himself accountable. And the simple fact of the matter is not everyone's going to get an A in math. You know, my middle daughter did all she could for physics to get an A in physics. And regardless of what she did, every extra help she went to, and she went to everyone, private tutors, never could for her. So she's not going to be designing anything for the space shuttle anytime soon.
Sounds a lot like me. That was not my best subject in school either.
Yeah, and that's okay. There are plenty of people out there that do that really, really well, and that might not be the forte for your child. Really, but the key is if they are held accountable or they taught to hold themselves accountable for those grades, they will end up at the place that is absolutely best for them.
Yeah, I think you sit down and talk about their college plans and say, you know, if you really want to go to XYZ University, you're going to need better grades than that. But I don't think you don't believe in grounding somebody, I guess, if they don't get their grades up or that kind of thing.
I don't, unless, again, the child agrees to that. Now, if the rules of the house is you got to be fed here if your grades are X, Y, and Z, then that's fine. That's the rules of the house. The challenge with that, though, is many parents will set rules that they're really afraid to impart. So be cautious about putting out consequences that you're really not willing to impart. You know, you hear it all the time. Parents will go, you know, put that down before I count to three. And I really think the counting to three is for the parent, not the child, because they don't want to impart whatever consequence. You know, if you don't put that down by the time I count to three, I'm going to take away your lollipop.
Yeah.
You know, who are you really counting for? The child should put it down when you ask them to put it down, not when you count to three. So I think the same thing here. Yeah, they need to get their own empowerment so they become accountable and realize, hey, if it's to be, it's up to me. I don't live my life as a victim. And if it's to be, I'm going to get it in my life. And sometimes
that grounding type thing is, again, turning to responsibility instead of accountability. You know, I'm going to ground you if you don't do this. And that's like you say, the wrong way to go about it, I think.
Well, you'll get results that way. But here's the thing. If I do believe that, you know, the stick is certainly a great, you know, that negative reinforcement is certainly a great catalyst for change. But it's not sustainable. Ultimately, it has to come down to the pride. If it becomes sustainable only to the point where the, you know, it really imparts who's bigger and who's more powerful.
Yeah.
And what I want is, yeah, I want my child to be the powerful energy in their own lives, not me.
Yeah, in their own lives, exactly. Well, tell us a little bit about your two books. There's Coffee with Ray. It's a simple story with a life-changing message for teachers and parents. That's the subtitle. And then you just released Lessons with Matt, which is an inspiring story of success strategies for teachers and parents of tweens and teens. And what's the format of the two books? I guess they're storybook type books, aren't they, with a message in them?
Yes. I'm a real fan of the parable, and I'm a real fan of a writer that he's passed away, but his writings were just very impactful upon me as I grew up and found my way. His name was Ogmandino.
Nice.
Yeah, and one of his most famous books was The Greatest Miracle in the World. And they were always parables, and you always wondered if the things actually happened in them. And and it was wonderful to have my own family call me on the first book and ask me, hey, where is this on Long Island, this place? You know, you say it's here, but that road doesn't lead there. And I chuckled, and it's just such a compliment that it came across that way. So I write it as a story I write them as parables for several reasons. The main one, obviously, maybe it's a bit selfish, but it's fun for me to write as a parable than just to write a nonfiction book, although it looks like my readers have requested a nonfiction book in the next year. So I'll probably take some of those lessons and put them into a nonfiction book about accountability in the next year.
I love those parables myself, and I always wonder how much of the parable is made up and how much is real experience of the author.
Yeah. And the thing I loved about writing this one, and they were written in homage to Og a bit, is you remember when we were kids, you used to get the ice cream man would come around, and you'd get that sherbet-y plastic cone with a piece of bubble gum at the bottom?
Yeah.
Yeah. The bubble gum was always so hard. You had to crack your teeth trying to bite into it. But that piece of bubble gum was like the special thing about that ice cream treat. And at the end of each of these books, there's sort of a piece of bubble gum for one for parents and teachers, and then the second one more for students in Lessons with Matt.
Well, I noticed in that Coffee with Ray has received 46 five-star reviews from the 50 Amazon reviewers, so it's certainly received a lot of real good accolades, and I've read a little bit of it, and it's certainly an interesting story that a fellow goes into a coffee shop and meets a sage that has coffee with him and turns his whole life around, and then I guess Lessons with Matt or some more follow-ups, and Ray sort of disappears but comes back in the second book. Sounds like a fascinating plot.
Well stated. Yeah, exactly. Ray, at the end of the first book, there's some things that occur that my readers basically said, wait a minute, what happened here? And I had to answer some of those questions in the second book. The second book took a little more detail. Someone, I think, really said it best about the first and second book. They said that where Coffee with Ray paints with broad strokes about raising accountable children, Lessons with Matt takes a much finer brush to the painting.
And where would someone go to get hold of your book and preview those books?
You can get them in two places. You can either get them on Amazon for your soft cover copies or anything for Kindle. Yeah. And they're also available on smashwords.com for digital download to anyone who has like a Nook or for Mac users. You can also go onto my website, nickambrosino.com, and there's a free report there about raising self-confident children. that people have found and also be made aware of when my next books are coming out.
Oh, that sounds interesting. Well, in conclusion, as parents of teenagers already know, it's often next to impossible to get your teen's attention, much less teach them accountability. But if there's one essential message we need to communicate with our adolescents, it's their need to be 100% accountable for their own success or failure, both now and over a full lifetime to come. And in his two books, Nick Ambrosino offers some extremely innovative suggestions on how to teach accountability to your preteens and teens. And both books are fun and easy to read, but they pack a powerful message. And I recommend you preview both books if you have children, young or old, or if your grown children have children and you are seeking to help guide your grandkids down the road to success. That also might be a good idea. And thanks for joining us, Nick Ambrosino, and best of success with the sale of your two books and getting your learning message out to parents and educators.
My pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Our guest today, Nick Ambrosino, talked a lot about inspiring your teens to and preteens to take responsibility for learning new things. And for the rest of the program, let's talk about an even more basic question, getting our message across to them, to communicating with our teens and preteens. And one of the most perplexing and sensitive relationships for those of us at middle age is with our teenage sons and daughters, as we all know. An offspring's transition from young child to teenager is difficult for them, but may prove downright traumatic for us as parents. What happened to that cuddly little child you cradled in your arms, pushed lovingly into the air on the playground swings, and taught how to ride a bike without training wheels? Remember the fun you had with your children when they were in Cub Scouts or Brownies? Remember his or her first T-ball hit and her first cartwheel and kiddie gymnastics? At 9 or 10, your sons and daughters were so proud to share their accomplishments with you and come to you as mom and dad with every fear, concern, or question. Now, as teens, they routinely shut you out, even as preteens. And as a recent guest on this program described, our teens eat, they sleep, they text, and occasionally they converse with mom and dad, usually when they want money or keys to the car. Our teenagers are like strangers who pass in and out of our house, hardly pausing long enough to notice mom and dad. As loving parents, we obviously don't want to give up without a fight. We want our teens to mature into well-adjusted adults who will live long, joyful, and bountiful and productive lives while we stay connected. We most certainly don't want to be shut out when our sons or daughters encounter a serious problem or face a critical decision. The problem is, parents, we must compete for attention not only with face-to-face romances and buddies and best-of-friend buddies, but also the 24/7 social media that has so radically altered teen and parent relationships. So how do you as a parent in your 40s or 50s decipher what's going on in your teenagers' lives? How do you retain your teen's attention and respect and for what you have to say? Well, let's begin by exposing two common misconceptions. First, it is not true that teenagers no longer search for rock-solid adult role models, even though they won't admit it. And secondly, it is not true that teens automatically dismiss us parents as candidates for that position. In fact, though few will admit it, most teens look first to a same-sex parent for guidance. Respect and loyalty to that parent is far from guaranteed, though. To retain the number one position, mothers and fathers must be welcoming, affirmative, completely honest, and never threatening to their teenage sons or daughters. And here are a few suggestions for you remaining as your teen's number one advisor. First of all, your teen no longer is a small child, so don't treat him or her like one. In conversations, you must respect your teens as near adults who have valuable insights and minds of their own. It is your teen's time for self-definition and testing, as we all know. So grant your teenagers new freedom to explore and experiment, always accompanied by a reasonable negotiated accountability for their actions. If subsequently a privilege must be withdrawn, your teen should always understand why. and force yourself on your teenagers. That's contrary to what a lot of people say, but you force yourself in a positive manner. In the car, let your teens choose the station and listen with them. And I can attest, as a former parent of a teen, this is not always easy. Some of that music really stinks. No, you don't have to become a full-fledged Belieber, i.e. a Justin Bieber fan, or Lady Gaga, or whoever it may be, but you should at least listen to them sing and then jointly discuss trends in modern music, watch TV programs together, and talk about the content, and whenever possible, go out on dates both you and your teen will enjoy. For instance, a mom and daughter ladies' night dinner and a movie, or father and son golf outing, just a few examples. Offer guidance to your teens in a general, non-threatening manner, trying never to single them out for harsh, mean-spirited criticism. For example, you might bring up a newspaper article on teen drug abuse and then ask your teen if drugs are a problem at his or her school. You could go on to discuss the dangers and harm drug abuse has caused to others without pointing a finger specifically at your own offspring. An especially useful tactic is to cite specific examples, for instance, a teen suicide or a celebrity whose life was ruined by drugs. And when you must discipline, always rebuke your teen's behavior and never your son or daughter as a person. It's an overused term, but tough love does make sense. You want your teenage son or daughter to understand that why you're punishing them and that you're doing so out of love and respect for their own good and as a positive guidance for their future. And rebukes always should be specific, not generalized. For instance, you always act so stupid. Those kind of things just don't cut mustard. And all discipline should be administered in private, never in front of siblings or close or friends. Another ground rule, set a firm family ground rules, which you and your spouse also must adhere to. And these should never be strictly teen rules. If one common ground rule is a nightly family dinner attended by all, then dad and mom must routinely be there on time. And don't expect your son or daughter to refrain from swearing if mom or dad swear all the time. And another excellent family rule is no cell phones or iPads at the dinner table. You know, it always drives me nuts when I'm out eating dinner with my wife and I see a table full of teenagers or preteens and they're all on their cell phones or their smartphones ignoring their parents. And here's a third great idea. All communication devices must be checked in by younger children, teenagers, and mom and dad at bedtime. Another suggestion, moms and dads coordinate in advance all teen privileges and disciplinary actions before approaching the teenager. As we all know, teens are highly skilled at playing one parent off against the other and at recruiting mom or dad, the more lenient parent, as an ally. And parents must always present a united front. And the parent versus parent problem can be especially acute, unfortunately, following a divorce or separation. That is why every divorce ideally should be negotiated as a win with child and teen welfare as primary consideration. And can't we divorcing parents agree to have a unified front in the matter of our children, no matter how bitter we may feel about some other aspects of the relationship? And when unable to make headway in communicating with your teens, try contacting their best friend's parents. Now, that sounds like a pretty radical idea, but strangely, teens sometimes open up more to a friend's parents than to their own parents. I know that was true of our teenagers when they were teens. You are not asking a friend's parents to snitch on your own children, but by comparing notes and discussing common activities is always a good thing. And as an added benefit, parents of teenage friends often become close friends themselves. And finally, a final suggestion, single moms of teenage sons and single dads of teenage daughters should attempt, if at all possible, to locate and introduce as role models adult family members of their teen's sex. There are certain things, as we all know, a teenage boy simply will not tell his mom or a teenage girl her father. There are certain opposite sex subjects, I can't say the word very well, that no man or woman is good at. And if no role models are available within the family, maybe you should seek outside counsel. simply because your son or daughter has turned 13, 14, 15, whatever, all hope is not lost. Millions of parents worldwide can affirm that their favorite child rearing was in the teenage years. Did you and your spouse do a good job of guiding and nurturing your offspring as small children? If so, your teens are ready and eager to take on personal responsibility. In fact, they demand it, and this can free up your time and talents as you replace your reliable teen on automatic pilot. Your job now becomes coach or mentor, inspiring and monitoring teen's performance and intervening only as needed to prevent or correct behavior that can be harmful either to your own son or daughter or to others. Obviously, you must do that. For a lot more in communicating with your teens and on conquering a host of other middle-age challenges, I suggest you preview my book, A Midlife Challenge Wake Up by Roy C. Richards. You can preview it and obtain a free gift at our website, www.middleagerenewal.com. It's also available both in print and ebook form on Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com. That's it for this week. Tune in next week when our guest will talk about teenage depression, how to spot it in your daughter or son, and how to help them overcome it. We certainly must deal with this crucial issue that leads to so many teen suicides and other problems that can last throughout life. So tune in next week for that. And goodbye for now, from middle age can be your best age.